I'd like to read to you this morning 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not you my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you. For the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. My answer to them that do examine me is this. Have we not power to eat and drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have not we the power to forbear working? Who goeth to a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care of oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes no doubt this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap of your material things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things. Neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my boasting invalid. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all, yet have I made myself a slave unto all, that I may gain the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law of Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I may gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof. Know ye not that they which run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain. Every man that striveth for mastery is self-controlled in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified. Now here we have the Apostle Paul talking about himself again. And as we're taking our general theme in the morning sessions of what made Paul tick, I think it's very helpful for us to look at him in this particular light. We have looked at Paul's philosophy, which was simple, straightforward, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. We have looked at Paul's principle, and his principle was quite straightforward. He says, the life I live by faith. We looked at Paul's power. Paul's power was quite simply this. We are not sufficient of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. Now this morning, I want to talk to you about Paul's perspective. Paul's perspective. I think it's so terribly easy to get things out of perspective. You know, as I have been counseling with a number of you, talking with you generally and thoroughly enjoying the time with you, I have found that over and over and over and over again in our conversation, the words perspective and balance have been coming up. And you know, I think that so often we have our biggest difficulties with perspective and balance. You see, there are some very straightforward, clear-cut issues where there's no arguing. You either do it or you don't. If you do it, you simply live in obedience. If you don't do it, then you simply live in disobedience. It's as straightforward as that, and there's no problem. The difficulty is that in between all the great, big, straightforward instructions and exhortations and commands that we have, there are all sorts of other issues, aren't there? And it's in these other issues that we usually have our problems. How to get things in perspective, how to maintain a balance. This is the problem. Now, just this morning, I've been looking into this passage, and it's been a tremendous blessing to my own heart just to see how Paul really had things in perspective. There are two things that I want to speak to you mainly about this morning, and I want to try and show you how Paul got them in balance. And if you want to take notes, here's the first thing. The first thing Paul is saying is this: I have my rights, but I don't insist on them. I have my rights, but I don't insist on them. And the second thing that he says is this: I have my responsibilities, and I don't ignore them. Now, it may seem that those two things aren't particularly related, but they are. You see, what he's doing is this. He's getting his rights and his responsibilities in perspective. And you will discover, if you haven't already discovered, in Christian work, that it is very easy to get these two things grossly out of perspective. His perspective was quite straightforward. I have my rights, I know what my rights are, but I never insist on having my rights. He said, I also know what my responsibilities are, and I never ignore my responsibilities. Now, this is what it means to get it out of balance. Sometimes, instead of knowing what it is not to insist on our rights and not to ignore our responsibilities, you know what we do? We ignore our responsibilities and spend all our time insisting on our rights. Now, that is a Christian life that is grossly out of perspective. And I think it would be true to say that in all probability, if you are having difficulty in your Christian service particularly, in all probability, it's because you've got these two things out of perspective. Maybe you have fallen into the trap of insisting on your rights, and because of this, you have been ignoring your responsibilities. Now, I hope that as we look quite simply into this passage this morning, it will help you to get balanced again. I want you to notice three rights that he talks about. First of all, in verses 1 to 5, he's really talking about his right to recognition. He says, I'm an apostle. I'm perfectly free. I've seen the Lord Jesus. You are my work in the Lord. And maybe other people would argue the toss about whether I'm an apostle or not, but you can't. If anybody doesn't have the right to say I'm not an apostle, you certainly aren't the people, because you are my work in the Lord. Now, as you all know from your studies of the Corinthian epistles, the Corinthians have been giving Paul a hard time. And they had been repudiating some of his claims, and they had been refusing him some of his rights. Now, he is simply coming straight out with the case and says this: I have every right to be respected as an apostle. I have every right to be regarded as an outstanding leader. I have every right to be perfectly free of all the backbiting that's going on among you folks. I have every right to be treated in a totally different way from the way in which I am being treated. I want you to know that I have my rights. He said, furthermore, I have my rights to lead about a wife like Peter does if I want to. And I also want you to know that if I want to quit working, I have a perfect right to quit working. And I also want you to understand quite clearly that I am in no circumstances to be told where, what to do and what not to do by you. Do you get the message? I like to hear Paul getting his hackles up. Boy, he's telling them. And he's telling them in no uncertain terms. He says, I have every right to recognition. And then he comes out with the most wonderful statement. He says this, but I'm not going to insist on it. I haven't the slightest intention of insisting on it. Now, I'm sure this took the wind right out of their sails. You see, because it's an awful thing to know in your heart that a person deserves respect, and to know also in your heart that you won't give him the respect he deserves. And then the person comes along and says to you, listen, I deserve your respect. I have every right to your recognition, but listen, don't feel bad about it. I'm not going to insist on it. I don't want you to think that I'm going to insist on any of my rights, so just take it easy. Don't get steamed up. I will insist on none of these rights, but remember, the right is still mine. Now get your rights in perspective. One of the things that you'll always hear people in Christian work saying is this, I'm not appreciated. They just don't appreciate me. You go on the mission fields and sit down and counsel with those wonderful folks out there living in the back of nowhere. And over and over and over again, they'll come and talk about their problems, and their problems are usually this, I have my rights. And they're insisting on it. And all that happens is they get so hurt and so discouraged, and many of them pack their bags and come home. Because they felt they had right to be appreciated, and they felt they had their rights to be recognized, and they felt that people should have treated them in a slightly different way from the one in which they did treat them, and because they weren't, they insisted on their rights, and they didn't get their rights, so they had to quit. That's sad. Learn what it is, even before you get out there, if that's where you're going. Learn what it is not to insist on your rights to recognition. The Lord Jesus didn't, and if he can do it, you can. Because of one very simple reason, he's living in you to be your sufficiency. Now I know it's going to hurt. I know it's going to irritate you. I know it's going to aggravate you. I know that once in a while you could just blow your top and say, I've had enough of this. Well, don't. Don't. Learn what it is to recognize you've got your rights and don't insist on them. That's his first thing. Right to recognition. The second right that he talks about is this. He says, I have my rights to remuneration. I have my rights to remuneration. And he puts up a very, very fine case here. I just wish we had lots of time to talk about it. Verse 7, he asks a very simple question. Who goes to war and pays for it himself? That's a good question. Who plants a vineyard and isn't allowed to eat some of the grapes? Who do you know who has a flock of sheep and isn't allowed to drink of the milk of the flock? Well, of course, the answer is nobody. If you go to war, you aren't expected to pay for it. And if you've got a vineyard, of course you can eat the grapes. And if you're breeding sheep, of course you're entitled to the milk. Now, he said, this is perfectly normal human reasoning. Everybody has the right to remuneration. Then he says, but not only is it the way a man would think about it, but he said, listen to what the law says, verse 9. He said, the law of Moses says, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads the corn. Does God care for oxen? Of course he does. Don't you think he cares for me then? And yet all you folks are doing is this. You deny me the right to remuneration, and you expect me to go on treading the corn, and you are putting a muzzle on me. God wouldn't even put a muzzle on an ox, but you put a muzzle on me. Ooh, he's telling them, isn't he? Good old Paul. He's really telling them. He said, I have every right to remuneration, and I want you to know it. And he goes on a little bit further. He uses other things. He said, listen. He said, the person who plows in expectation, doesn't he? And the person who threshes, he threshes knowing perfectly well that he's going to have something to enjoy after he's threshed. Listen, he said, I've done a bit of plowing among you folks. And he said, I've done a little bit of threshing among you folks. He said, are you going to deny me the right to enjoy the legitimate remuneration that's mine? I have my rights, you know. I have my rights. And then he goes on, he said, listen, he said, I've given you spiritual things. He said, the response, the perfectly normal, legitimate response to having spiritual things given to you is this. You simply repay immaterial things. He said, spiritual things are far more important than material things, but you, having received my spiritual things, actually have the audacity to deny me material things. I've got my rights. And he goes on, and he goes on, and he goes on. And then he says this. He said, the Lord has told you in uncertain terms that they who preach the gospel are entitled to live by the gospel. But now I want you to notice in verse 12 what he says. Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but we suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. He said, at no time have I ever insisted on the perfectly legitimate, scriptural, moral right of remuneration. Never once have I insisted on it. And he said, I also want you to know now, I am not writing this to you now asking for money. Oh, listen, remember this when you get into Christian work. Don't spend half your time dropping hints in prayer letters. And don't spend the other half of your time going around trying to raise your support. Oh, that reminds me of something, Bill. I must tell them. I'm sure I oughtn't to. But our wonderful friend Hunter Norwood, and I believe some of his children are here, we went on a trip together around South America. And poor old Hunter had trouble with his back, and he had to wear a rather unpleasant implement of torture to support his back. And every few minutes, you'd see him stop and go like this, you see. And Bill said to him one day, what on earth are you doing? And I said, he's raising his support. Oh, well, God bless him and his support. He says he'll never be able to go around talking about raising support again. Anyway, that's by the way. But listen. Oh, do get the thing in perspective. Of course you have your rights. But don't insist on them, because listen, you will soon discover in all probability if you are insisting on your rights to remuneration, you will become embittered in the end. And it will kill you stone dead. I remember once in England, going to a meeting, and at the end of the meeting, well, I was there for a long weekend, I think it was. They came up to me and said, what do we owe you then? What do we owe you? So I was a little taken aback by the approach, so I said, what was that? What do we owe you? Oh, I said, I'd have to work out my bill. Have you got a piece of paper? So he looked a little taken aback, and I got a piece of paper, and I said, I have driven 750 miles. Now, when I worked for the bank, I was allowed 1 shilling and sixpence per mile, so that's 750 1 shilling and sixpences. What's that? He said, oh, I don't know. Well, I said, we'd better work it out, haven't we? 750 shillings, 750 sixpences. Right. Now then, I have spent 5 days here, but I had a day travelling and a day going back, so that's 7 days. Now, a labourer gets, I think I'm right in saying, so much an hour. Now, 7 days is 8 hours, 56 hours. 56 hours at such and such, that will be this. And then, of course, there's all the time that I spend in preparation. I would estimate, well, I'll give you that at half price, is it? And I worked this out. And I worked it out, you know. And I got the most fantastic total. I was thrilled with it. And the man went white and sat down. Sat down. I said, there you are, there's my bill. Oh, he said, I didn't mean that. I said, I know you didn't. I know you didn't. I said, listen, let me tell you something. Never, never, never ask someone in Christian work what you owe them. Because they might just tell you. You know, I've never been asked back to that church. I can't imagine why. And after I'd explained this to him, I said, listen, friend, I don't want a penny from you. I honestly mean it. I don't want a penny from you. If you want me here on the basis of what you owe me, oh, God bless you, forget it. You don't owe me a penny. Now, this is the sort of thing I'm talking about. Oh, and it's so awful to get yourself absolutely eaten up with my right to remuneration. The third right that he talks about, I think it's implied in this passage here, is my right to relaxation. My right to relaxation. In verse 19, he says this, I am free from all men. I have the right to live my life my way. I have my own rights to organize my own program. I am perfectly entitled to relaxation as and when I wish. But, he says this, I haven't the slightest intention of insisting on my right to relaxation. He says, I am free of all men. That is my right. I am not answerable to any of you. And therefore, I have the right to relax when I wish and go where I wish and do what I wish. And I want you to understand this quite clearly. But, having told you that, he said, I want you to know this. Even though I have my rights to be free of all of you, I have made myself a slave to each of you. Now that's what he's talking about. He says, I have my rights to recognition, and I'm not insisting on them. I have my rights to remuneration, and I'm not going to give you a bill. I have my rights to relaxation, and this is what I'm going to do with my relaxation. I'm going to make myself a slave to all of you. That's perspective. Now, you know, you can get yourself into such a knot over this business. And there's no doubt about it that in many instances, when you get into Christian work, people can be most unreasonable. But if you go around insisting on your relaxation and you're this and you're that, and you're perfectly entitled to, you will soon discover that you'll become so utterly self-centered. You'll be no good to God or to man or to beast. So beware of insisting on your rights. Now, what are you doing? Are you insisting on your rights and ignoring your responsibilities? Well, let's look at the second thing now. Let's look at his responsibilities that he talks about. I want you to notice mainly what his idea of responsibility is. In verse 19, he says this, For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I may win more. Now, this is his first thing he's got in mind. I want constantly to be winning more people. Now, this is your responsibility. Do you accept this as your responsibility? I want constantly to be winning more people. This is old Paul, the great theologian. That's what I love about Paul. Boy, if ever there was a theologian, it was Paul. But if ever there was a soul winner, it was a theologian, it was Paul. And let's face it, you don't decide whether you're going to be this or that. You have got the responsibility to go on winning more. Then another phrase that he uses, I like very much, at the end of verse 22. He says, I am made all things to all men that I might by all means save more or save some. I'm looking to win more. I'm looking to save more. Oh, this is a wonderful thing. To really know what it is to be involved in winning people to Christ and to really know what it is to be involved in saving people. Let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save. I can't remember it. Let me start again. Let him know that he which converted the sinner from the error of his way. What? How's it go? Two, one. Save a soul from death and hide a multitude of sins. Good. That's right. I get these blackouts once in a while. It helps. It's at the end of James, and if you're not sure where James is, it's the cleanest part of your New Testament. Now, is this what you're interested in? Are you really interested in winning more? Are you really interested in actually being involved in saving souls from death, hiding multitudes of sin, delivering people from the error of his way? This is your responsibility. And then he also says this in the end of verse 20, verse 23. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be a partaker thereof with you. That isn't a very good translation. What he really says in the original is this. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be a gospel sharer. The idea of being a sharer. My responsibility is to win. My responsibility is to save. My responsibility is to share. Now always remember this. A basic elementary rule of spiritual experience is that you're always a sharer. All that God makes available to you, he intends to be made available through you. Always remember that. It's a golden rule of spiritual experience. And one reason that some people dry up spiritually is this. All the time they're stuffing stuff in and never giving anything out. One of the major dangers in Bible school. Stuff, 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 stuff. Cram it in, cram it in, cram it in. Never give it out. And you stagnate. You go stale. Always remember that all that God is imparting to you, he intends you to share with other people. This is your responsibility. Now then, do you see your responsibility like this? Are you ignoring your responsibility and insisting on your rights? Well, with that in mind, now then, let's have a look at a number of basic responsibilities that he outlines. First of all, he talks about my responsibility of identification. In verse 20, he says this, Unto Jews I became as a Jew. As far as those who are without the law are concerned, he said, I became as one without the law. As far as the weak are concerned, he said this, I became as one who was weak. And as far as those who are under the law are concerned, I became as one who was under the law. Now, you've got four different categories he talks about there. Jews, he said, if I'm going to be dealing with Jews, then I know I have got to get myself totally identified with Jews. He says, if I know I'm going to be dealing with people who are under the law, I have got to get myself totally identified with those under the law. He said, if I am going to get myself involved with those who are without the law, I've got to get identified with them. And he said, if I'm going to deal with weak people, I'm going to be identified with them in the area of their weakness. There is no substitute for identification if you're going to win people to Christ. And unfortunately, we're not terribly enthusiastic about this. Because we have a problem with balance, don't we? You see, if you start getting identified with people who are diametrically opposed to all that the gospel is about, then how do you know where to draw the line? Well, I would say this. Be absolutely firm and clear in your objective. Be absolutely crystal clear in your convictions. Be quite straightforward in your message. And under no circumstances let any of these three things diminish. Objective, convictions, and message. They are immovable. On the basis of that, then be prepared to identify yourself to the fullest possible extent without allowing any of those three things to suffer. Now, you will find, of course, that people's convictions vary. Therefore, if you can be identified with certain people without your conviction suffering at all, you will find that there are other Christians who have different convictions. Now then, they may make it hot for you. Now, if they're going about it the right way and you're going about it the right way, there'll be no friction. There'll be tolerance. Because they will know your heart and you will know their heart, and you will give them the right to have convictions and they will give you the right to have convictions, and they will know that it's possible that there's a slight variation. But listen, never, never, never think that to identify with people you have got to go overboard. You haven't. Now, to use a very simple illustration of this and a very up-to-date illustration, I have spent a lot of time, not so much in recent years, but in former years, I've spent a lot of time working with the Way Out kids, the ones you call hippies. They're not hippies just because they've got long hair. And I have found it relatively simple to identify with them. But under no circumstances have I ever found it necessary to grow my hair long. I have never found it necessary to have a flower behind my ear. I have never found it necessary to go with bare feet, mainly out of concern for them. And I have never found... I have never found it necessary to go to the extremes. But I have found it absolutely imperative to identify with them at the area of their need. And you know what I've discovered? I've discovered that if I tried to look like one of them and act like one of them, when obviously I wasn't one of them, all that would happen would be they would despise me. Now, that does not mean that I go to the other extreme, and you don't go among a gang of hippies dressed in your Sunday suit and start having the choir sing a lovely hymn that you love in church. They'd say, get lost. And you don't take in a pulpit and get a big Bible and say, I would like to read to you from the second apostle Paul, epistle to, you know, all this sort of thing. They'd say, yuck. There has got to be the balance of identification that under no circumstances allows you to prejudice your position, but certainly allows you to get to them at the point of their need. Now, you've got to work this out. And this is your responsibility. And I'll tell you something. The easy thing is to go to the extreme one way or the other. You can get the hardliners on one side who say, under no circumstances, and you get the other guys on the other side who say, go the whole hog. And the really hard thing to do is to have an identification that really gets to them and doesn't compromise, and that's your responsibility. Now, we can't go into the details of how he became a Jew to the Jews and under the law to those under the law. We don't need to. These are principles. A responsibility of identification. A second thing is this, a responsibility of adaptability. We have got to be adaptable. One of the things that is killing the church stone dead is this. The church has become so utterly conservative that it is suspicious of anything progressive. An old friend of mine, a wonderful old missionary, who for years and years and years was working out in South America, this old friend of mine was saying this. He said, what I can't understand is this, how the church that started off the most radical movement that this world has ever known has become so conservative it's sinking slowly out of sight. I'm not talking politics. I'm not talking theology. I'm talking attitude. I honestly believe that the church has got to be conservative in theology. I believe it has got to be thoroughly radical in outlook. And I believe that we have got to be thoroughly progressive. And I'll tell you something. There is a responsibility to be adapting, not your message, not your message. There has got to be a responsibility of adaptation to the situation as you find it. Because listen, just because a certain thing was done a certain way by your forefathers 100 years ago doesn't mean to say that is the only way it can be done. And of course, there are many, many obvious evidences of this. If I am going to look in the Bible for all the things that I must do as far as definite, practical outworking in the 20th century is concerned, I'm going to make a fool of myself. Paul went across the Mediterranean in a sailing ship. It took him weeks. I didn't. I don't feel bad about it. I flew across in a Boeing 707. It took me 25 minutes. Paul trotted around the place doing this and that and the other. Listen, Paul never went on TV. I have. There's one thing frightens me. Do you know what it is? I went on TV once for a half-hour program, and in half an hour, I spoke to more people on that program than Jesus Christ spoke in the whole of his ministry. That's frightening. Now, you've got to extend this further. And it is your responsibility to be prepared to be all things to all men so that by all legitimate means you may win them. And you've got to find the balance. But beware of extreme either way. But this is your responsibility. And I feel that when your spiritual condition is right and when your heart is right and when your love for people is right, God will keep you from excess. The responsibility of adaptability. Thirdly, the responsibility of dedication. The responsibility of dedication. Now listen, this old world of ours isn't going to be won by anybody fooling around at Christianity. That's why we're so far behind in getting the good news out. We're way behind. And that's because we've been treating Christianity as a hobby. Now let's face up to it. Paul says there is a definite dedication that is necessary. He talks about a runner, verse 24. He talks about a wrestler, verse 25. He talks about a boxer, verse 26. And when it comes to dedication, those three types of people are dedicated. Now, listen. You have a tremendous responsibility to a sheer dedication to the Lord Jesus and a dedication to your ministry. And you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to get so wrapped up with your rights that you totally ignore what you're supposed to be doing. The man who's a runner, in all probability, doesn't have too much time for relaxation. The man who is a runner knows perfectly well that he's going to get recognition for a few minutes at the end of the race in the Olympics. But he doesn't expect recognition for the hour and the hours and the days and the weeks and the months of the years of slogging along, running on the roads in his own in the dark after work. He doesn't expect everyone to say and stop and clap him on the back. He knows that he has no rights to recognition then. He will bypass those because he knows that the dedication is such that he's going to be dedicated to what he's doing, not for recognition, but because of objective. And so, let's face it, if you are simply dedicated to a certain person or dedicated to a certain work because you want to feel good, you may as well quit. You get around to a dedication that he's dedicated to the Lord Jesus and dedicated to the job that he has in mind for the sake of the Lord Jesus and the job that he has in mind. And it will be a dedication that will deny you all sorts of things like dedication denies runners and wrestlers and boxers. And that is your responsibility. Now, I'm talking to some of you right now, and you know you're way off center. You're insisting on your rights, and you're ignoring your responsibilities. The next dedication, next responsibility you have is this, a responsibility of determination. A responsibility of determination. I like the way Paul puts it here. He says, don't you know that everybody runs in the race, but only one guy wins? Well, he says, you make sure you're running as if you're trying to win. Now, there's no doubt about it that if we really talked about our Christianity as being a race, most of us aren't showing any signs of being interested in winning. Did you ever see a guy running a race? On your mark, get set, bang, you see? And he gets up and pats his hair. And looks around and sees a friend. Hello, good to see you. And all these other guys are belting around the track. You see? And he's running a race. He's not running a race. Listen, that's you. That's probably you. There is a responsibility to determination. It's this. If this Christianity business is a race, run it as if you intend on winning. And if this Christianity is a wrestling, if it is, well, listen, let's face up to it. You've just got to exercise some self-control. Because, I don't know if you've done any wrestling, I did a long time ago. And it's rather painful. And when that guy gets you in a Boston crab, you have got to exercise some self-control. You don't say, stop it. I don't like you. Ow, ooh. I'm going home. You shouldn't have done that. That hurts. Is it? Did you ever see any Christians like that? Oh, I've seen them. Oh, I don't like open air work. It hurts.
Oh, well, of course I couldn't do this. I'm shy.
Do you know what someone said to me the other day? It did upset me. Oh, listen, let's have some determination. If this Christianity is wrestling, show some self-control and get to grips with the business. You've got a responsibility to gain them and to win them and to save them and to share. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to go in for boxing... Don't prance around, just, you know. You think don't just prance around. I mean, by all means, go ahead. You'll never win anything. And the other guy will just let you prance around, until you're tired out, and then he'll say, you ready? That's the end of you. Oh, listen, there's a responsibility to determination. And here's the last one. There's a responsibility to discipline. There's a responsibility to discipline. He says, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. I fight, not as one beating the air, but I keep under my body. And I bring it into subjection, lest by any means, having preached to others, I should be disqualified myself. Listen, the further you go into Christian service, the bigger are going to be the temptations, and the bigger the opposition, and the more the devil is going to hit you as hard as he can, and the more discipline is necessary. And I'll be talking more about that tonight. Paul's perspective. I have my rights, I don't insist on them. I have my responsibilities, and I don't ignore them. I've got rights and responsibilities in perspective.